When I first started giving anaesthetics, I clearly remember being told that you were never cognitively entirely the same after an operation for a period of time far longer than you might imagine. Backing this up is the familiar advice given to patients concerning not making important decisions or signing legal documents for 24 hours after an anaesthetic. But how much of a problem is delirium, persistent postoperative cognitive decline, and dementia in the surgical population? For this podcast, it's my pleasure to be talking with Dr. Rob Sanders from the Department of Anesthesia and Surgical Outcomes Research Centre and Wellcome Department of Imaging Neuroscience at UCL. Rob, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Rick. Nice to be here.
Rob, I'm reading more and more about the long-term effects of anaesthetic agents in a dazzling variety of age groups. How significant a problem is persistent postoperative cognitive decline?
Rick, that's a great question, and unfortunately I don't have a great answer for you. I've no doubt that there is persistent postoperative cognitive dysfunction, and when it occurs, it can be disastrous for an individual patient. And obviously, the setting in which a stroke occurs, for example, is evidence that you can have a devastating neurological event occur in the perioperative period with long-term consequences for the patient, both in terms of cognition and their quality of life. And in that respect, it's very important that we address postoperative cognitive dysfunction because it can be disastrous. The question of whether it's as pervasive as we think it may be is still open. Certainly, some studies have suggested that there's cognitive dysfunction at 5 years and 1 year following surgery. These studies have used a very permissive definition of POCD, where up to a third of patients would be expected to have postoperative cognitive dysfunction just through the methodology that's been used. And therefore, they've likely overestimated the effect on our population, particularly of elderly patients who are going through surgery, and overestimated the impact POCD is having on those patients. Therefore, I think it's an open question at present, and we need to do a lot more research to understand where in the spectrum between a devastating stroke and a very subtle cognitive problem patients are falling.
Surely then, Rob, this is a tip of the iceberg problem if, as you said, some studies are reporting POCD in up to a third of patients. With today's aging population, we're performing increasingly invasive surgery on patients who previously would have been turned down on age alone.
Absolutely. Well, Rick, I think he knows, but some studies are reporting up to 50% of patients that incur postoperative cognitive dysfunction. And one of the major problems is cognition is a dynamic property of people. So it changes with time. Unfortunately, from our 40s onwards, we know we're already entering a phase of cognitive decline. And therefore, if you don't measure the cognitive decline that's occurring before the operation, you can't possibly understand the dynamic that's occurring after the operation. For example, a patient who's already declining preoperatively, but we only take a single measurement in a few days before the operation, and we then measure their cognition postoperatively, will be seen to decline from that single measurement. But they may just be staying on their original cognitive trajectory preoperatively because they were always declining. And there is yet to be a robust study which dissects the preoperative cognitive decline from any postoperative change. And that's why I think we need to be very cautious in interpreting the literature regarding POCD.
You've already mentioned the problem with definitions, and as is often the way with complex observational syndromes, the lack of a cohesive definition amongst researchers. But with some studies detecting POCD in up to 50% of patients studied, what do you perceive to be the problem with the definitions currently in use?
Rick, that's an important question. What typically happens in those studies is that a series of neuropsychological tests are administered to a patient, and POCD is defined as a decline in one of the tests by one standard deviation. And that means that a patient can improve in all the other tests, but if they've declined in one, they'll still have a definition of POCD. And so therefore, it's a very permissive definition. And it's been estimated that just administering that series of tests with that statistical methodology, it will give you a diagnosis of POCD in approximately a third of patients.
So in addition to a consistent definition, what else is hindering research in this area?
Well, I think it's not just about POCD. We also have evidence that postoperative cognitive improvement can occur, and I think that's very important to recognize, especially as physicians attempting to improve the quality of life of patients. It'd be reassuring to know that we can also improve their cognitive function in the postoperative period, and therefore that surgery and also our support through anesthesia may be able to cause an ameliorative process and improve cognition is quite exciting, I think. So not only is there this problem that we're not assessing the preoperative cognitive trajectory, so we're not taking into account what's happening to a patient's cognition preoperatively, as in, is it declining, is it stable, or is it improving preoperatively? We also need to look at the trajectories post-operatively to understand how many patients actually benefit cognitively from an operation and how many decline. And as I've described, this clearly POCD can occur in particularly very devastating situations such as stroke and perhaps following other neurological impairments such as delirium. But for a patient who essentially escapes unscathed from the perioperative period neurologically, there's that potential that they will go on and improve. And in a recent meta-analysis of cardiac surgical studies, they actually showed there was a trend to postoperative cognitive improvement at a year rather than decline.
That's very interesting and very much at odds with the general dogma with regard to cognitive decline post-on-pump cardiac surgery. So what are the proposed mechanisms for postoperative cognitive improvement?
Well, again, this is slightly speculative because this hasn't been studied enough because of this dogma that's dominating the literature regarding POCD. As I said, I think postoperative cognitive improvement is a very exciting possibility. And it's also biologically plausible because if you were to treat something that's causing ongoing inflammation or ongoing pain through a surgical procedure, then it is reasonable that by removing those pathologies which can hinder cognition, you'll get improvement postoperatively because you'll reduce the cognitive strain, if you like, of pain and inflammation.
Before I read your editorial, I hadn't come across the concept of postoperative cognitive improvement, and it certainly is an intriguing idea. Before I ask you about some of the evidence supporting this phenomenon, I wanted to address a more basic fundamental, which is what is the difference between postoperative delirium and POCD?
Well, I think that's also an important question. And again, there's a lack of consensus on this. In my mind, postoperative delirium is a very severe neurological problem. And I think we've got good evidence now that it's associated with very poor outcomes postoperatively too in certain individual patients. And therefore, it really desires and we really must focus in on postoperative delirium as an important clinical problem. The association of postoperative delirium and subsequent dementia or subsequent cognitive decline still needs further research, but it's biologically plausible that there could be a link between the two because we have a severe neurological insult occurring immediately after surgery. It's therefore understandable that there may be a more subtle neurological insult occurring that has a more prolonged impact on cognition. The difference between POD or postoperative delirium and POCD is that POCD has to be diagnosed on subtle neuropsychological tests and it may not be apparent at the bedside in the immediate postoperative period. I think there's very little controversy about the idea that POCD will occur in the short term after surgery, for example, for the first week, first few weeks, first few months, up to 3 months probably at least, that POCD can be measured on these subtle neuropsychological tests. But that's very different to the more severe postoperative delirium which can occur in the perioperative period and is typically more short-lasting.
And is there any research to suggest that there is a link between the two, that delirium may be unmasking a neurological vulnerability?
Absolutely. Well, there is some research, but again, insufficient research. Some of the studies which have attempted to link POCD and postoperative delirium have failed, and that may be because of their methodological approaches, or maybe there's no link. There's also a link between delirium and further episodes of incident dementia later on. However, it's very hard to infer any causality between these things because all we're doing is observing when these things occur and then associating them. And therefore, we don't causally know whether delirium can precipitate a postoperative cognitive decline or postoperative dementia yet. I would suggest, based on the associative data we have, that it's a distinct possibility and that perhaps by targeting postoperative delirium, we really can improve cognitive outcomes for our patients postoperatively.
Well, this is clearly a significant problem, and as anaesthetists, we may not fully appreciate the impact it has on our patients, occurring, as you described, in the weeks to months following surgery. But when I've got a patient in front of me that I'm about to anaesthetise, are there any specific risk factors I should be looking for?
Well, age is regarded as an important risk factor for POCD, and there's this concept of cognitive reserve where more elderly patients are supposed to have less cognitive reserve and therefore be more vulnerable to a subsequent postoperative cognitive insult. I think it's very important to consider the severity of surgery and also the possibility of critical illness after surgery and postoperative complications. And it's likely that all of these different factors compound each other and there's a sort of multiple hits which could produce both postoperative delirium and possibly POCD. And it's maybe that the inflammatory burden associated with significant surgery and postoperative complications can result in more significant cognitive decline. It's also possible that in the perioperative period, hypoxic or ischemic brain injury can occur. In fact, there's a recent study, a small pilot study, which suggests that up to 10% of patients undergoing non-cardiac, non-neurological surgery will have a subclinical stroke, also known as a covert stroke in the perioperative period. And it's possible that these subclinical hypoxic ischemic injuries could also contribute to any postoperative cognitive changes in the perioperative period. So there's still plenty we need to understand, but I would say that it stands to reason that if you have an elderly patient, particularly who has vascular disease and therefore maybe already on a declining cognitive trajectory, and then they're undergoing a significant surgery, such as vascular surgery or cardiac surgery, it's not unreasonable to expect that they may cope with the cognitive insults of surgery and inflammation in that perioperative period less well than a younger patient having less severe surgery.
And you've touched on something there that was mentioned in the editorial that I found absolutely fascinating, that the postoperative component of POCD may be misleading as to the true etiology because we've observed a similar type of acute decline following both critical illness and in those suffering from chronic pain.
So we know that inflammatory insults can cause significant brain injury. We know, obviously, that hypoxic ischemic insults cause significant brain injury. And we also are now having accumulating evidence that pain, particularly ongoing chronic pain, can cause a significant brain injury. And all of these different factors can impact upon a patient's cognitive response and therefore their vulnerability to another insult, such as surgery. And depending on how surgery, how significant that surgery is, how it's conducted, and how the patient recovers, there's a possibility that the cognition may be impaired postoperatively from those series of insults.
And is there a role for neuroimaging studies in the diagnosis of POCD?
I would say not at present. Certainly as a research tool, it's very, very important we do serial neuroimaging studies in these patients. There's a fascinating study by Klein and colleagues which suggests that there is measurable atrophy in the hippocampus in the weeks to months following surgery in our patients who are vulnerable for Alzheimer's disease. And then this improves and the atrophy reverses with time thereafter, indicating that the neuroplasticity evident in the brain can cope with the inflammatory or the neurotoxic insults that occur in the perioperative period. And even though there might be short-term cognitive changes and short-term morphological changes in the brain, these are reversible. And I think that's very exciting and also adds biological credence to the idea that there could be postoperative cognitive improvement.
Okay, so we've talked about the who, the what, and the why, but having identified a patient at risk, is there anything I can do with my anaesthetic to ameliorate any subsequent cognitive decline?
Again, we lack definitive data on this. I can tell you that the studies which have done meta-analysis approaches, all the studies who've compared regional and general anaesthesia, have not found a difference in POCD postoperatively.
Well, that's very interesting, isn't it?
Absolutely. So these studies would support the idea that anaesthesia per se doesn't cause postoperative cognitive decline. Now, there are several caveats to this. One, some of the methodological problems in the study of POCD. Then there are also, we have to weigh into this, a series of animal studies which suggest that anesthesia exposure can affect, for example, the generation of amyloid beta and therefore would be expected to possibly precipitate dementia later on. However, I would say to the anesthetist that they mustn't necessarily modulate their practice based on the study of POCD at present. I don't think we have strong evidence that any particular anesthetic regimen causes POCD over another. We do have some evidence, for example, that benzodiazepine exposure is associated with postoperative delirium. And so maybe the specific drugs may be avoided, and that might reduce the burden of these cognitive complaints. But we still need more data on that.
Is there any evidence for the enthusiasm of cerebral function monitoring, such as interrupt cerebral oximetry or depth of anesthesia?
Yeah, there are some evidence for those enthusiasts to follow. Near-infrared spectroscopy has shown some very promising results in the last few months for reducing postoperative morbidity. And so I think that as we begin to learn how we can use these techniques, for example, to measure interoperative autoregulation of blood flow or merely to measure cerebral oxygen saturation, we can use these parameters to further guide our clinical care. And this doesn't surprise me because about one in five patients won't have any evidence of cerebral autoregulation when they present for cardiac surgery, for example. So we can't rely on autoregulation to preserve blood flow. And now we have some evidence that a covert stroke is quite common in the perioperative period. I think we need to start putting these facts together and looking at how we can modulate the different factors which we change in our anesthetics, such as blood pressure, oxygen saturation, cerebral oxygen saturation, to improve outcomes. In terms of depth of anesthesia monitoring, again, there are data to suggest that by using a depth of anesthesia monitor, you may reduce postoperative delirium. This may be an indicator that the brain, which is vulnerable to delirium, is also vulnerable to the anesthesia. So you need less anesthesia to produce the same clinical anesthetic state as you would in a patient who wasn't as vulnerable to delirium. Those data, I would say, are still preliminary, but they are exciting. And as we learn to use these monitors, I think that perioperative care will improve because we'll be able to be more personalized in our approach to anesthesia.
Coming back to the concept of postoperative cognitive improvement and identifying the patients who may benefit cognitively from surgical intervention, was there any specific piece of research that pointed to this as a possible outcome?
Well, I'm grateful for several colleagues for highlighting this to me rather than this being any sort of insight that I'm going to have any ownership for. Dr. Alexandra Hogan at UCL, Francesca McCormack at Cambridge, did this fantastic meta-analysis of cardiac surgical studies and showed that if you looked at the data as they are, rather than trying to correct for control groups and so forth, and just took all the data, merged it, and did a meta-analysis, you could show that cognition improved at about a year postoperatively compared to their preoperative level. And there was no doubt that in the short term following surgery, there was a decline, but longer term things improved. And I thought that was a very, very important piece of the puzzle. And it was based on, you know, a large quantity of high quality studies done in cardiac surgery. The other important fact to bear in mind are the studies looking at patients with chronic pain who've then gone on and had, for example, joint replacement to treat their chronic pain, and have then showed improvement in cognition because they've taken away that painful impairment of cognition that was occurring preoperatively. And you can see here the cognitive trajectory has improved because we've treated the cause of the cognitive decline with a surgical procedure. And I think putting that biological plausibility together with the statistical epidemiological evidence from multiple studies presents quite a powerful view that POCI is possible. And I think the important thing is to work out which patients are likely to get improvement postoperatively and which are likely to get decline, and then working out how we can modulate the factors which puts one patient in an improvement category and one in a decline category.
So finally, Rob, as a researcher in this field, what work are you doing or would like to see done to further our understanding of postoperative changes in cognition?
Well, I mean, I would like to thank Dr. Nadelson and Dr. Avedan for their work and their collaboration on this editorial/review article we've done. I'm excited by some of the concepts which have come out of that work and also the discussions I've had with my collaborators like Dr. Hogan. What I would like to see done is that we need to address this problem about the preoperative cognitive trajectory. And that needs to be done in a various different ways. It's not that easy to just defer a patient's surgery so we can measure their cognition perioperatively or preoperatively and then in the perioperative period. But that's one approach which maybe needs to be taken. And there are other approaches we can do, such as prospective cohort studies to measure patients' cognition over time and then build in how surgery affects that cognition into that ongoing cohort study. So this is not easy to study, I would say, but it's something that's very important to study. And the other element that I think is very important to emphasize is postoperative delirium, because this is actually a common problem that is affecting our patients, particularly after major surgery. And it requires our attention because we understand many of the etiological factors involved in delirium and actually administer some of them, such as benzodiazepines, in our own practice. And we need to be thinking of ways that we can reduce delirium because there's associated morbidity during the episode of postoperative delirium, but also associated morbidity and mortality postoperatively following an episode of postoperative delirium that we may modulate through our practices as anaesthetists. So I think it's a very exciting area of research. We need to look at the preoperative phase more closely, and we also need to look at the postoperative phase more closely to understand how delirium ties in with these more, with the more subtle neurocognitive impairment occurring in POCD.
Rob, thank you very much. That has been very interesting. It's a fascinating area, and I'm certainly very excited to see what work comes out in the future. It's been great to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Rick.